It's getting dark, and nervously, you pace back and forward in your modest home. You're worried. You sweep the dirt on the floor from one side to the other, back and forward, back and forward, back and forward. More time goes by. You stare into the darkness and you begin to pray out your fretfulness. Oh God, where is my husband? I know he didn't find work today. I went to the marketplace, God, and I saw him standing there late afternoon. Lord, where is he? Has something happened to him? Or is he too ashamed to come home empty-handed again? And your prayer is broken by a tug on your dress. It's your five-year-old daughter. Mummy, mummy, where is Daddy? Why has Daddy not come home yet? Is he bringing us something to eat, Mummy? I'm hungry. And with that, the door swings open, and there is Daddy. Hello, my sweethearts. Prepare the table. We have a feast. Look, I have bread, I have cheese, I have figs, and a special treat for the two women in my life, a little honey. You are surprised, but a little confused. But, my love, where did you get all this? I know you didn't work. You didn't steal it, did you? And your husband says, the most amazing thing happened. The most marvelous thing happened today. There I was, standing at the marketplace, waiting all day for a job. The hours went by. Some got hired, some gave up and left. But I waited. I couldn't bear another night lying in bed, my stomach growling, your stomach's growling. Then about the 11th hour, the CEO of a vineyard conglomerate, that not even one of his managers, the CEO himself, on his fourth or maybe fifth trip there, he yelled out to the few of us left, why have you been standing here all day, doing nothing? Well, my first thought was, what a nerve. But we yelled back, well, obviously, because no one's hired us. But then he said, I'll hire you. Well, an hour's work, a few pennies, better than nothing, I thought, so I went. But an hour later, when the paymaster gathered everyone, would you believe it? He paid us first. Not those who had worked 3 or 6 or 9 or 12 hours. And would you believe it? He gave us wages for an entire day. A whole denarius for 60 minutes. I was so overjoyed that I skipped to the marketplace and I bought all of this. Isn't it wonderful? Tonight, we feast. Friends, imagine if you were that 11th hour worker. How would you be feeling? Overwhelmed with the compassion of the vineyard owner? You see, despite the title in the NIV Bible that's given to this parable, the focus is most certainly not on the workers in the vineyard, but rather it is on the compassionate boss. This is the parable of the generous vineyard owner. And that is, of course, a picture of God and a picture, verse 1, of what the kingdom of heaven, heaven's rule on earth, is like. So as we unpack this end time parable near the end of Jesus' ministry, a parable found only in Matthew, let's get a sense this evening of the lavishness, the extravagance, the abundance of God's grace. Let's ask how we respond to it. Come with me once again to verse 1. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace, doing nothing. He told them, you also go and work in my vineyard.
and I will pay you whatever is right. So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did the same thing. About the seventh hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, why have you been standing here all day doing nothing?
Because no one has hired us, they answered.
He said to them, you also go and work in my vineyard. This is a story filled with questions. It's a story filled with surprises. That's what a parable is supposed to invoke in us. You see, the owner of the vineyard, he needs workers. Either the vines need pruning or it's harvest time. So at five different times of the day, he goes out to the unemployment corner of the marketplace to find hired hands, starting early in the morning, that's 6 a.m., and then every 3 hours thereafter. If you've been to Israel or many parts of the Middle East, this is a scene you might still see today. I remember a few years ago being at the Damascus Gate in East Jerusalem, mid-morning, and there were still Palestinian day workers hanging around in the hope that a man would pull up in a van from an Israeli kibbutz and shout out how many should jump in the back for a day's work. But think of the humiliation of those who get turned away. No, only seven today, get off! But then, in verse 8, we get the first of three surprises. Did you notice? This parable is structured in a very Hebraic way, a kind of parabolic template that had been around for at least 1,000 years at this point, where each half reflects the other half, and the bamboozlement, if that's a word, the surprises all come at the very centre, verse 8. So, first surprise, verse 8. The owner of the vineyard has a foreman, a steward, leading us to ask, well, why then is the owner of the vineyard doing all the recruitment, not the foreman? Why is the CEO of the vineyard conglomerate himself going out to hire workers? Surely his HR department should do that. So that's the first surprise. Second surprise, on the heels of the first, the owner says to the foreman, call the workers and pay them literally the wage. That is a full day's pay for all of them, regardless of how long they've worked. Now that goes completely against their sense and our sense of justice, doesn't it? Equal pay for unequal work. As one person puts it, little seems more unequal than the equal treatment of unequals. What's going on here? Today we hear a lot about pay equality, don't we? Which means equal pay for equal work in our context, between men and women usually. But this is more like the prize money for Grand Slam tennis tournaments, which between men and women is actually equal pay for unequal work, because controversially, the number of sets that men and women play to win a match is different. Equal pay, unequal work. So first surprise, why is the owner doing the recruiting, not the foreman? Second surprise, why is there equal pay for unequal work? Third surprise of verse 8, the owner insists that the workers are paid beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first. The exact opposite order to what the foreman and the workers and Jesus' readers and I think we would expect. What's happening here? It's all the wrong way round. Well, I hope in all this we can begin to see how all these twists all point towards the compassion of the vineyard owner. At the start of the day, 6 a.m., he
He sees many eager, unemployed men, and he hires enough for his vineyard for that day, hoping that others would be engaged by someone else. He comes back at 9 a.m. to see what's happened, finds others waiting around, and verse 3 and verse 4, there's the sense that though he didn't really need more workers, he says, oh, well, you also go and work in my vineyard. By midday, he's confident that the rest would have found work and gone home. But he sees instead a sad crowd. His heart is moved. He hires yet more men. At 3 p.m., his compassion compels him again to check the unemployment corner. And to his amazement and dismay, there's still men hanging around. So he hires them, maybe rewarding their courage. Finally, at 5 p.m., the owner returns for a fifth time. Surely an hour before the working day finishes, everyone would have gone home. They must have gone home. But no. He finds some very dejected and humiliated workers. Why have you been standing here all day doing nothing?
Well, because no one's hired us.
That is, we want to work. We're willing to work. We're ready to work. We're able to work. And so we won't give up. We'll stand here, if necessary, until the light fades and we have to go home in the dark. Now, at this point, the vineyard owner, he could have said, couldn't he? Oh, you poor things. Here, have a denarius each and buy yourself some food. But verse 7, instead of giving them a hand out, he gives them a hand up, a job. Notice he doesn't promise to pay them anything, yet they accompany him. Maybe the workers have watched him repeatedly returning to the marketplace, and they are trusting at this point in his compassion. So off they go to the vineyard, where at this point there's probably more workers than grapes. And just an hour later, with barely enough time to clock in, to find baskets, and even walk to the vines, the day's over. Finished. It's pay time. Now, in what order does the owner instruct the foreman to pay his workers? The owner could have kept to the usual order. The first worker is first, and the last is last. First in, first out. But Jesus is teaching us, chapter 19, verse 30, many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. Or put the other way around, chapter 20, verse 16, the last will be first, and the first will be last. He wants everyone to see, especially the 6 a.m. workers, hot and dirty from their 12-hour shift. He wants everyone to see how much each worker gets paid. If he paid the 6 a.m. workers first, they'd just take their denarius and go home happy, wouldn't they? But he wants them to see, verse 10, that the 5 p.m.ers get a whole day's wage, say £100. Wow, that's generous, they think. That must be the hourly rate. So the 3 p.m.ers, they're next, they should get £300. And we, the 6 a.m.ers, should get £1,200. Maybe their eyes spin, they become pound signs. So imagine the 6 a.m.ers' astonishment. Their shock when they see the 3 p.m.ers get £100, the 12 p.m.ers get £100, the 9 a.m.ers get £100, and they themselves, the 6 a.m.ers, the hard workers, the committed ones, the hot and bothered ones, the first ones chosen, they get £100. But that's not fair. Verse 12, we should receive more. Is it fair? Our natural instinct reading this is to agree with them, isn't it? We live by a just desserts culture, don't we? Children get merit badges, even in preschool. Bankers get bonuses in line with what they've brought in. If you're here today and you work in an office, imagine if someone got paid the same as you for doing the same job,
But whilst you do 9 to 6 each day, they only do 5 till 6.
That's not fair. You'd take your employer to a tribunal, wouldn't you?
But friends, understanding the vineyard owner's heart here is to understand the generosity of the grace of God. You see, there's two responses. To find God's grace amazing, as we assume the 5 p.m. workers did, or to find God's grace infuriating, as the 6 a.m. workers did.
So the owner says, verse 13, I'm not being unfair to you. And he's right. No one is underpaid in this parable. I'm fulfilling what we agreed. I'm giving you what I'm contractually obliged to give. Notice that the other workers didn't have a contract as such. To the 9 a.m.ers, the owner said, I'll pay you whatever is right. And to the rest, he didn't say anything. We were made to ask the question, well, what is right? What is just where it's not defined beforehand? Surely it is this. Verse 14, I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do with what I to do what I want with my own money? Or literally, is your eye evil because I am generous? So we're reading this asking, what is right? What is justice? But Jesus' point is that generosity and compassion are part of justice. He's saying, you 6 a.m. workers can go home to your wives and children and proudly say that you found work and have a full day's pay. But I want the 5 p.m. workers and everyone else to be able to open the door of their homes and have the same joy in their hearts and the same money in their pockets. I want their wives and children to be as proud of them as yours are of you. So can you see and can you feel the generous grace of God here? God is the landowner, and with his relentless pursuing of and compassion for the unemployed, I think we can even say that the incarnation of Jesus himself is in mind here. Going back again and again and again and again and again to have compassion on the people. Well, as an economist and businessman, the vineyard owner's got a lot to learn, hasn't he? But that's not the point. The point is, see God's compassion, see God's generosity, see God's grace. See it, and unlike the 6 a.m. workers, don't seek to control it or dictate who it should be given to, but rather experience it and imitate it. Let it transform you. Are you gracious yourself as God's been gracious to you? Some of you may have read Isaac Dinesen's short story, Babette's Feast, or watched the movie version. Babette was once a chef for nobility back in France, but she finds herself serving as a cook for 2 elderly sisters in a strict, dour, fundamentalist community in Denmark. And every night her austere employers instruct her to cook the same dreary meal, boiled fish and potatoes, because they say Jesus commanded, take no thought of food and drink. So Babette buys lottery tickets in the hope of winning enough to go back to France. But then the unbelievable happens. She wins the lottery. 10,000 francs, a small fortune. So in celebration, Babette asks if she might prepare a French dinner with all the trimmings for the entire village. And at first, the townspeople refuse. Oh, no, it would be sin to indulge in such rich food. But Babette begs them, and finally they relent. Well, as a favour to you, we will allow you to serve us this French dinner. But the people secretly vow not to enjoy the feast, and instead to occupy their minds with spiritual things, believing God will not blame them for eating this sinful meal as long as they do not enjoy it. So Babette begins her preparations. Caravans of exotic food arrive, cages of quail, barrels of fine wine. And finally, the big day comes and the village gathers. The first course is an exquisite turtle soup. The diner down without enjoyment. But although they usually eat in silence, conversation starts to take off. Then comes the wine, Veuve Clicquot 1860, the finest vintage in France. And the atmosphere changes. Someone smiles. Someone also giggles. An arm comes round and drapes over a shoulder. And someone is heard to say, "Oh, after all, did not the Lord Jesus say love?" And by the time the main entree of quail arrives, those people are giggling and laughing and slurping and guffawing and praising God for the many years they've shared together. Now, this pack of Pharisees is transformed into a loving community through the gift of a meal. And one of the two sisters goes out into the kitchen to thank Babette, saying, "Oh, how we will miss you when you return to Paris." But Babette replies, "Actually, I will not be returning to Paris because I have no money. I spent it all on the feast." Friends, as you experience the grace of God, given in another sort of meal, how does that grace change you? And how does it transform us as a community? Do we seek to control it, or do we seek to imitate it? If you are a believer and the grace of God lives in your heart, Jesus' sacrifice and resurrection to atone for your sins, if that's you and you've received that grace, experience it and imitate it. Be that grace and give that grace to others. If you've been a Christian for a while, sometimes that sense of serving a generous master can grow dim, can't it? And we can become a grumbling, graceless church, a meritocracy full of harsh words and irate emails and bits of papers stuck on walls with lists of do's and lists of don'ts and legalism and a lack of joy. Now, a church like that is a sad, self-righteous place to be, isn't it? But friends, God's grace is amazing. His love is overflowing, and his mercy reaches people that we might think are undeserving. In the context of the passage, that's the challenge that Peter the Apostle had to deal with. Remember, end of chapter 19, Jesus is saying this parable to remind him and to remind all 12 disciples that though they were the first to give up all that they had to follow Jesus, Jesus actually includes all true disciples as having received God's grace equally. The disciples shouldn't think that they are first in the kingdom, for the first shall be last, and the last first. They've been shown the same grace as every other follower of Jesus. God's grace makes us all equal. So friends, I hope you can see from that general principle many other applications not immediately addressed here in the passage. Jews should not despise Gentiles for being latecomers to the grace party. Law-abiding Pharisees should not despise repentant prostitutes, for God's grace is given to both. Simeon, who held baby Jesus in the temple at the beginning of his life, should not despise the thief on the cross who believed at the end. Believers who trust in Jesus today have the same privileges as Abraham, the friend of God in the Old Testament. And someone who believes in Jesus on their deathbed receives the same grace, the same generosity, the same welcome as someone who's been a Christian all their life. And equally, today, God does not only show grace to those who have ticked our evangelical boxes, only those who've said a certain conversion prayer in a certain way or been a member of the right church. God has grace on whomever he chooses, whether it's those we think don't deserve it or those we think have got it wrong. God has grace on whomever he chooses. If that were not the case, then he wouldn't be God, or it wouldn't be grace. God's grace makes us all equal. And as we experience it, don't seek to control it, to put limits on it, to tell God who he can or who he can't give it to. But rather, imitate it. Show it to others. Be like Jesus, who chose to be poorer, that others can be richer. You know, it's quite a striking feature of this parable that it doesn't really have a proper ending, does it? We're just left hanging. And we ask, well, what's the response of those 6 a.m. complainers? Do they say, give me more money now, or I'll take it from you? What happens? We don't know. Do they say that? Still unable to understand grace? Or do they say, you know what? You're right. You've been fair with us and you've been generous to others. We should be more like you. Does that happen? We don't know. But friends, that's because Jesus invites us to find ourselves in the story and to bring it to a conclusion in our own lives. That's his invitation to us this evening. What do we do with his grace? Do we seek to control it or imitate it? In what areas of my life is God asking me to imitate his grace? How can I be more like the compassionate vineyard owner in the way I treat other people? At home? In church? At work? What is your response? How will you bring this parable to a conclusion in your life? Thank you, Father God, that your grace is amazing.